Welcome to Holden Village in the Creekside Room. Today's speaker is Betts Zoll. The title of this talk is Conscious Living Values.
If he's really talking about what values we have around dying, it's just dignity and not staying on place for too long. Maybe he's talking about the same thing.
It's quite possible.
Yeah, I hope so. Yeah, I bet so.
There. You're not going to do the other one, so we can compare notes.
See,
if we do each one, then we can talk about it afterwards.
Yeah. Did
you do the writing then?
No.
Did you do the writing?
No.
You
no.
Do you know whose pen is on?
That might be better.
Okay, so I think we'll get started. This is the many-titled workshop, John and I should call it. We have written here Alternative Lifestyles Workshop, and we always also call it Voluntary Simplicity to Ourselves. And then we have Conscious Living as our current title. And we want to explore in this workshop some practical concepts of living more simply so that others may simply live on a real life daily basis. I do like one-fifth of my time. I'm Rosie Betzall, and I do nonviolence training for one-fifth of my work. The other parts are music, singing, and teaching voice. And Jonathan?
Okay. Yeah, I'm Jonathan Betzall, and I have a full-time job as a children's librarian at the public library near Seattle, but I'm also a Quaker and do a lot of work with Voluntary Simplicity through the Quakers, through a secular group called Voluntary Simplicity Association, which is based in our neighborhood in North Park, Seattle. God, what else? And I meant to go back to the Quakers and say we have a strong testimony or a set of beliefs that we kind of expect people to go along with on what we call simplicity. But the way it's been fleshed out over the years, it more or less coincides with what many Christians have come to call voluntary simplicity. So I've been doing work on this for 20 plus years, mostly thinking and reading about it. But we have given this workshop in one form or another about 3 or 4 times now, in various places.
Could I interrupt you just for a minute?
Sure.
Certainly.
Do you want me if you have that mic a little closer to you?
Really? Oh, yeah. We didn't know.
It doesn't have to be real close to you, but somewhere.
Okay.
Should we start over?
No, I'm sorry. It's recording, but not very well.
Okay, thanks.
But we're just getting to the substance anyway.
Did you intend to do that reading now, or should I share more of our goals?
I share our goals first, then I'll read this.
One of the reasons that we're interested in the voluntary simplicity movement, as it has come to be called, or simplifying life for us people here in the West, is because it is in the effort to live a more just lifestyle. We can have a little more solidarity with the poor if we begin to simplify our choices that we make for our life. And that even though some of these choices that we make don't directly benefit poor people, don't directly benefit people in other parts of the world or in our neighborhood, they will in the long run benefit people because they won't keep up the lifestyle that can be seen as a greedy lifestyle that we tend to use. John?
We were looking at the bookstore this morning and came across this book called Silence, Simplicity, and Solitude, a Guide for Spiritual Retreat by David Cooperman. It has a very nice definition of simplicity in it. Simplify, 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 Henry David Thoreau advised us from his own life experiences and his famous retreats near Walden Pond. Most of us have heard this sage counsel, but very few have followed it or begun to understand the sublime impact simplicity could have on our lives. We live in a consumer society. This means that our environment is saturated with consumerism, buying and selling, creating believable needs, production and marketing. Some real estate promotions even try to convince us that the air we breathe is something we need to buy. As factory production proliferates, it appears more and more true that our air, our water, our forests, our natural resources will become consumer goods that all have a price.
We wanted to talk a little bit about some of the choices that Jonathan and I have made in our life to try to simplify in order to have more time as a family, in order to have more time to volunteer in our neighborhood, and probably for many other reasons.
Well, a lot of them have to do with using less of the world's resources.
Right, right. Why don't you go ahead and talk about the choice that we've made of having one car, and it happens to be electric, so we can't drive more than 40 miles an hour, 40 miles on any day with our car.
Right. So. Yes, it's about a year and a half, 2 years ago now, I just got so sick and tired of polluting as I was driving to my job in my old clunker beat-up car that I knew was in such bad shape that every time I went to have it inspected, we had to get a waiver from the state transportation department because it was over a certain age and the repairs would cost a certain amount of money. And here I am, this born-again ecologist, saying, oh no, I can't afford to fix up this car. I can't afford to buy a new one. And I finally said to myself, I am not going to pollute anymore. I know that whatever I do, it's going to cost me more than buying another old Heat and driving it for a while. But I cannot stand it. I cannot stand to be polluting this way any longer. So I had just happened to see an article on the Seattle Electric Vehicle Association in the newspaper and called up the number they gave, and the person I talked with referred me to another man who analyzed my needs and then said he had a car for me to buy. Not only that, he loaned me the money to buy it, so I'm now paying him off.
That's a deal.
Yeah, it really was a deal. Well, I convinced him, when I told him why I wanted to do this, that I was not a techno freak really interested in building these neat little cars, as most of the people in that association are. About two-thirds of the people are tinkers and hobbyists, and about the other third are ecologists like me, who just got tired of it. So I went, and it's a 1980 Dodge Omni. We paid $6,000 for this car, but it has been converted to electricity, to run on electricity. It has 21 batteries, and I won't go into all the details of that, but it literally does not burn anything. Originally, it was built with a gasoline heater, and that was removed, and instead a little electric space heater was put in it, which I don't use anyway. But as Rosie was saying, it does have a very limited range. It doesn't go very fast, especially on hills. It does tend to slow down. In fact, a friend of mine composed a parody of The Man Who Never Returned based on that phenomenon, which I'll sing for you at some other time. So there's been a price. I mean, it's expensive to buy, but relatively cheap to run. Because it's an old car, not because it's electric, it does, some of its systems break down quite a bit, like we have to get the brakes done very frequently. That's also partly because it's so heavy. So we've made, this has been a sacrifice. We can't just jump in the car and go off to Mount Rainier. It simply won't go that far. Well, on those occasions, that's when we do have to borrow or rent a gasoline-powered car.
What do they say when you go to the emission testing?
I don't have to go at all.
they actually have worked that out that you don't have
yes,
to go?
Yes, this was worked out some years ago. SEMA has been around since about 1980, 82, something like that. So they worked out a lot of those problems. Also, the insurance company did give me a problem. I told them what this car was. I showed it to them, and they still insured as if it was a gas-powered car. So I pay very low rates because I don't go very far. So there are some benefits to it, but as I say, the benefits to me are not economic. The benefits are that I'm not polluting. And that for me is a big one. Once in a while, I actually have a little sign that I put in the car when I'm at work saying, if you have questions about this car, come talk to Jonathan. And one person has done that in the 2 years, year and a half I've been doing that. But it was worth it, to have one person come up.
Can you tell us electric car, though? I mean, does it look
like it? Yeah, it says electric car on the side, electric vehicle. Anyway, that's just a brief description, and I mostly wanted to say why I wanted to do it and why we're keeping it up, even though it's a real pain in the neck when it breaks down, because the mechanical things we can take to the local shop, like the brakes, they'll do that, but they don't want to touch the electrical part of it. or they want to touch them, but we won't let them. But the great thing is that because we're part of this association, the members of that come out and fix our car essentially for free. They charge us for the parts. And they do all the labor for free, and some of that labor has been like days worth. You know, can you imagine an auto mechanic doing that on your car? I don't think so.
For a price.
It would be a big price, but you know, our the only price we pay is, it's not a price at all. We're in fellowship, is what it comes down to.
Yeah, except we do pay the price of convenience. I mean, we're, but not really. We were used to riding a gas-powered car. Most people are used to not having a car at all. So what we're doing is just getting down to what more people are like in the world. They ride the bus, they bicycle. So,
do you find you use public transportation?
Oh, yes. Yeah. I guess I ride about 20 miles a week on my bike, different places, and then take the bus to work. Mm-hmm. And another thing that we wanted to, let's see, my example, and we should do living cooperative with them too. But another example is that we try to, instead of buying entertainment, we try to make our own entertainment. And so we especially this one thing that we do is our neighborhood, people in the neighborhood get together every month and have a sing, and it's children and anybody else. And we just pick out a song and as we go around a circle and we sing whatever song people have chosen at that very second. And the kids can get together and run around and play games if they're not interested in singing. And it's a real cooperative effort.
And it's part of our effort to build closeness in our neighborhood. That aspect of it has kind of waxed and waned, but at times, you know, we met some really interesting people with really widely varying interests that we had no idea. This one guy was actually from Mexico, lived right across the street from our friends, and so we invited him to play a Mexican song. We started playing, and it turned out to be a Spanish translation of some Frank Sinatra song.
And another thing that we've done with our life is, but this started before we met even, was to live cooperatively with other people. Neither of us ever lived in a giant commune where everything was wild and free. We never passed quite through that stage that some people in our age group did. And I'm glad. But we live cooperatively in order to share the resources that we have. John has a full-time job as a librarian, and I've been able to have a part-time job as a musician and nonviolence trainer because of that. And we used to income share with two people who, at one time or another, were unemployed during the income sharing, and then also have become drug and alcohol counselors, gone back to college and become counselors while we live together. So that we've tried to really, when we live together with someone, we try to support them. And it's not like we have to have, we're pretty tolerant to begin with. So we don't have to have things a certain way. Change is always a struggle, but it's a worthwhile struggle as we see it. It's always built.
And I would say you get used to it too, in a sense. You know, there's always going to be a little bit of stress, but when you can kind of expect the kinds of things that might happen, you anticipate the kind of things you can expect to happen, it becomes a lot easier. So the first time or two, it's really a big growing experience. You can kind of open up if you're able to do that, open up and experience it, and it's really a big transition. But I'm also speaking about taking new people into our household as a new person comes in. We've been through this 50 times now, you know. So it's not as big a deal anymore.
Yeah. How do you arrange that for a new person to come in, or how do you choose a person to have in your household?
That's a big process. Yeah. When we invite somebody, when we're looking for somebody to join in the household, if someone is leaving, we usually, in the past, we have put notices up on, like, at FOR, the Fellowship of Reconciliation office, or the Quaker meeting. But this time, we advertised in a newspaper the last time. And we usually do like two or three interviews of people. and try to get really in-depth questions going. And hopefully, if we do it two or three times in a row, they have questions too. So we can really get to know each other pretty well. We never really know each other real well before we move in, but we try to see whether we have the values that are similar. Values around children, because we have children, and our newest housemate has a boy who's 8 years old. Values around the world, how to change the world through nonviolent conscious choices, or or other ways people can believe.
And we try to see that our visions are at least somewhat compatible. We're not taking any Nazis. And especially not any homophobes.
Right.
But the point we're trying to make is you see the values that we've tried to make conscious in our lives.
And what would you say some of those values are?
Well, we've been describing them. We've been talking about sharing and not wanting to consume more than our share of the world's resources. We're talking about supporting each other. We're talking about being open and honest. And kind of that general outlook on life. We'll be doing some brainstorming on this a little later.
In fact, right now.
Right now?
Yeah.
At time. Okay. Uh-huh. You want me to write?
No, you were going to leave,
right.
And I was going to write.
Okay. Thank you.
Must be sharing.
That's right. Okay, now do you all want to brainstorm it? Everybody knows what that is? Okay, basically what we just list out our ideas as quickly as they come to mind. We don't discuss them at all. The storming part of it is that as an idea gets put up there, perhaps it'll spark off something else in your mind. And so Rosie will write it just as fast as she can while we do that. And what we'd like to brainstorm is those values, the kind of things I was trying to name that we've been trying to live out.
I mean, you get this idea of community, like you were talking in the 60s, of people sharing other people, not maybe even wise, but they'd be just a community of people.
Uh-huh.
So I would have a value that you would protect family and, relationships. It would be no...
Oh, okay.
No mixing up of the people, from... a family unit would be kept sacred.
Uh-huh.
Because if you're living with a lot of people, there can be, things could go on that, people are people.
They might.
And so you need to be a...
Yeah, and that has to be a value when people
have some religious foundation or belief in God.
Okay.
Let's see.
Oh, yeah. Right, I'll tell a story about that later. Others. Who knows, nobody's put convenience here.
Doesn't sound like it.
Or low cost.
Oh.
Low cost.
Yeah,
okay.
You have
one. Good.
Somebody else.
I think.
Yeah. Somebody said.
There it is.
There it is. Okay.
Yeah. Any last ones?
Yeah. Yeah.
Good. That's a great list. A lot of what we're going to talk about falls under that.
Yeah.
Are we missing anything major? I don't think so. Let's go this little bit so we're going to be sure it's...
Education?
That is what we should look at. It's children. Future focus.
She said education.
Right, but that reminded me.
Okay.
Great one, right?
Well, do you do homeschooling, you mean? Or?
We don't.
Yeah, that's because we have a very good arrangement with public schools.
We have good public schools. So.
But it would lend itself to that. You could have somebody in the group.
It would, but none of us were like that. good, okay. The next thing we wanted to do was have you get into groups of two or three. I think three, and maybe John could be in a group.
Okay.
And you could share with each other something that you have done in your life to bring you closer to live with your values. Now, it may not be one of the values we listed. It may be one that you are remembering right now. But if you get together, take a minute to think about, you've probably made changes in the last few years in your life. And it could be something real tiny, but significant to you, or it could be something major in the way you live. Think about it for a minute, then I'll have you get into groups. And before you do that, we wanted to give you an opportunity to use this list to write down a list of values for yourself. So that's why we asked you to bring pencils. And I have a couple extra myself, if you need them. So why don't you take a few minutes and just, from this board or from your own head, write down for yourself what are your key values that you're striving to fulfill in your life. And we changed it again. We're going to get into pairs. And I would like you to remind yourself of what change you were thinking of, or remember again what change you've made lately in your life. And I want you to also think about and talk to your partner about what benefit you get out of it. Now, that benefit every benefit that you get out of a change isn't necessarily going to be altruistic. It may be a personal benefit that really supports you in the other aspects of your life. Sometimes I think that when I'm thinking religiously, I look at benefits and I say they have to be altruistic. But I don't think that's how all of life works. The world and the people that live in the world give us back wonderful things when we give to them. So it's when we're generous, we get generosity back. So it's a good thing.
Can I give an example?
Yeah.
Okay. We were both very active in the anti-Vietnam War movement, and as you may remember, part of the motivation for instituting the draft lottery was that this was going to take away that pressure that was causing so many draft agents, men especially, from wanting to oppose the draft. There would be a lottery, and once you were free of the lottery, then the pressure would be off, and presumably you would forget all about the war. But instead, what that did was it freed a lot of us from the fear of being drafted and then being punished for having been anti-war activists. So that gave us more time to campaign against the war. So it kind of turned around on it. So I found out that being an anti-war activist, which for me was never a personal thing anyway, I knew it was very unlikely I would ever go to Vietnam, was always an altruistic thing, ended up benefiting me personally anyhow, because it ended up with this draft lottery coming in, I got a high number, and was completely out of danger. Hope that's a clear enough example. Okay, so let's get into pairs.
We should probably not be together.
Right, yeah.
Okay, so you two, and okay. I'll come over here.
Okay. So, maybe any questions about what they... So I'm going to give you about 4 minutes each, one person to talk, and then 4 minutes for the other person to talk about a change they've made in your life and why you made a change, that change. Then we'll come back together and maybe share some examples that you have.
Does it need to be just one change?
No, it could be several. It could be, yeah.
Colonel.
Larry.
Hi, Larry.
Yeah.
Must be Larry.
All right.
Well, go ahead,
Larry.
Changes
that
we need
I guess it's kind of changed that I'm making in that direction. Simplify my lifestyle.
Was it very large?
Probably the first major one was when my youngest daughter moved out. I did with the television. So. I haven't had one since. Not missed it at all.
You only have one.
I have no daughter.
Oh, you only have one television?
That's seriously true. No, I think also working on things, basically, to do with my time, other than watching TV. Been doing a lot more music.
Are you a musician?
My dad's not a professional musician. Played recording for a number of years. Been studying the cello for the last 4 years. This has all been very positive changes, I think.
Okay, what do you do for a living?
One of those airplane companies in Seattle.
Oh, what do you do?
Computer systems, engineering.
A bullet, a sender. Steve Johnson. He's a mechanical engineer. There's like 200,000 viewers. If you add the Kansas to the list, I guess. And we've got sort of a lot of that same line.
And it had to be a small one.
And she's talking about, we just made open for one thing. And you know, you get sitting in some of these groups, particularly on the line of food. We had started in the last 8 to 10 years, eating lower on the food chain. I mean, I was less grim.
Right.
Greens, like this morning's breakfast we had, that's our breakfast. And we've done that both from a health standpoint, you know, probably that was the biggest reason. I mean, sure, it's much simpler, you're not eating fast, but it's just healthier for both of us. We've always, I mean, I sell real estate, so I didn't want to be the consumer. When I was selling
the things, ultimate consumer product.
Yeah, well, the ultimate consumer product is this glorious house and this lovely waterfront. You know, so I'm probably, when I sell real estate, if people are interested in listening to my stewardship story, my concept of stewardship of the land is that, you know, you're only temporary. You know, renting it for a short instant of time because somebody else is going to open it too. But we've kept that, and we've been in the same house for 31 years. 30 years ago, we thought, well, we'll sell the big house, we'll raise the kids, you know, we'll get a smaller house, maybe in the lake, but then we'll have to spend more money and have, we already have this house, which we've paid for.
Anyway,
why do we want to get a bigger or fancier house?
If you haven't shared in the other direction, go ahead and start sharing in the other direction.
A Honda Nissan pickup.
I don't two pair, but I wasn't sure about you.
But, you know, you have to put on a show. Yeah, you got to have the, you know, and so I have a little bit different style than the average. I mean, I have my little truck. We live in a house we've lived in for 31 years. And it's not that you can't afford it. I mean, I make enough money that we can do it. But that's not the issue. It's that we don't need all this stuff.
It'd be interesting if someone remodeled their house to get rid of a couple of rooms.
Yeah, nobody ever makes that. Nobody ever makes a house smaller. They're always remodeling it to make it bigger. If they did remodel, they could be more efficient.
So the other thought I had along those lines is that houses should be designed so when you have kids, you roll in one or two mobile units that hook on. When the kids grow up,
and you
get rid of them, and then you've got them.
But you know, thinking of houses, though, houses, people, you know, like cars and houses, well, they don't make them like they used to. And that's true. Actually, houses are way better. They're much more efficient. In a new house, a super good sense house is a little less. We use a tremendous amount. We use less energy to keep them warm than an old house. It's just like the old car he's talking about.
Yeah.
I mean, the way we can save the world is driving a newer, energy-efficient car, living in a reasonable energy-efficient house that uses less electricity, has water-saver fixtures. You know, so there is things like that. In fact, it was interesting that we lived in a Setzer plant, Setzer Lutheran.
Oh, yeah.
And there was an engineer in Corners Club. He gave this, I remember about 10 years ago, he came to the Corners Club and had a chart that showed the need, the energy needs in the future. And he was talking about the need for these nuclear plants. And then, you know what happened, you know, that the need for nuclear plants come, and they all get mongrel. And so 10 years later, he comes with the same chart. And he talked about, because about this time, they were talking about energy saving, and the line just, instead of continuing going up, it goes like this. And he said, this is why, because conservation came in. And people were responding to energy conservation and all the, putting the heater around, I mean, putting the insulation around their hot water tank so it doesn't, so it, the heat stays in and you don't need, it's more efficient. Insulating the underside besides the attics of the house and insulating the walls and putting in double pane windows.
All right, well,
people started doing that. And lo and behold,
let's get back to dinner and share
power.
These examples with each other. If you're willing, then I'd love to have everybody share an example of a change you've made or a couple, whatever. Who wants to start?
So we'll start. We're talking about not buying packaged food mixes of any kind, but instead, you know, either working from scratch or making your own mix.
Uh-huh.
Spend lots of money that way.
Yeah.
That was easy.
It's
my,
better for you.
It's easy in my family because my aunts would notice if a cake had been made from a package.
Oh.
And they would comment on it quite audibly. So no one dared do that.
That's great. Okay, then we can talk some more about the electric car.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Oh, and this is both a liability and a benefit, that we have to schedule fairly carefully who's going to be using the car and where they're going to go, and make sure to get there and back, make sure that there aren't competing for it. But fortunately, I work within barely the commuting distance of my bike, so as long as I don't have to carry anything too heavy or too bulky, I can get there by bike. You know, the car is free for others to use.
We lived on a sailboat for about 4 years, and I guess that really changed our whole value system.
Yeah.
We realized we could do without a lot of things that we had done with before. Just our whole eating, you know, our whole nutrition system changed a lot. I think just appreciating where we were at the time, not having to depend on a home, was a change that we made. Kind of our security system changed a little bit. More our family unit was the important thing. Whereas my husband said, where he has his cup of coffee, his home. So, you know, you learn that you can survive on very little. Yeah. So we always know that.
I could go next. We've been coming up here to Holden for about 25 years, and so we have been part of this philosophy of live more simply, and so whenever we go home, our eating has patterned the eating, the food here, and our children have been coming here since they were small, and so now they're married and have their own homes, and they have also established simplified lifestyle in some ways. Food, nutritious food. Spouses don't always buy into the program because they haven't been part of this. But I think, and then trying to recycle when we can and waste as little as possible.
That's what I share because I'm with her. But what got me thinking, though, about conservation, we haven't talked about much conservation, and I just shared with Larry, I'm at Kiwanis Club in Shelton, and I don't know, 10 or 15 years ago, the local public utility engineer was in our club, and he shared a chart with us showing the need for nuclear power. And we live near the Setsa plant,
yes.
The two Setsa plants that are being mothballed, they're being And he showed the chart, and he had the line, you know, showing way up here in 1994, you know, we're going to need this much energy, so we need these plants. And he brought, he saved that chart, and he came back to the club a few years ago and showed what happened about that time. I remember the years, but the principle, the line went flattened out. And it's about the time they changed houses, and this super good sense concept came with 6-inch walls and, you know, 30 inches of insulation. And the electrical energy, the heat a new house today is a fraction of what it costs to heat an old house. Talking about the old car, that's the pollutant. The new house is much more energy efficient to live in than the old house. The new car is much more energy efficient than the old car because they've got all these stuff on them to make, you know. So conservation works. Everybody was tucking insulation around their hot water tanks and turning off lights. And so the word's getting out, I guess.
Yeah.
Because there's three nuclear plants that aren't going to be built.
Well, in terms of getting to a simpler lifestyle, I guess I've gotten into a lot more doing my own entertainment. The youngest daughter moved out on her own. I gave her the television set. And in the years since then, I've been doing a lot more with music, working on that, playing in different groups.
Uh-huh.
I find that to be much more satisfying than any of the previous things.
Yeah. Well, John, do you want to conclude?
Okay. Back to the hot seat again. Well, it sounded to me like people were having a fairly easy time identifying the values behind the decisions that you've made. Course that you chose to follow. Am I right? Mm-hmm. You felt like you knew pretty much where you were coming from, so this has been a fairly easy exercise for you, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, good. I was going to go on and talk a little bit more about that, but obviously I don't need to because you got the point already. We were actually intending to go on with this for another hour, but we didn't have that much time. So tomorrow we're going to come back in the morning and use the same list that we generated today and talk more specifically about going on from where we know what to do to where we don't know what to do. We have a decision-making method. I don't think we really have a name for it. That we think will help people progress in that direction. Make sure I haven't missed anything here. No, is that it? Yeah, we've discussed what we already know how to do. Then tomorrow we'll talk about.
And we know that you may not be here, but we're going to use the brainstorm that you helped create.
In the meantime, I was just over at the Holden Library and picked up several books I thought might be of interest. This one's called For the Common Good, Redirecting the Economy Toward Community, the Environment, and the Sustainable Future. It's quite thick. This is written by an economist and a theologian named Herman Daly, the economist, and John Cobb, the theologian. And they talk about the values that are behind modern day economics. Very interesting stuff. Really opened my eyes in a lot of ways. Kind of confirmed a lot of suspicions that I had.
You mean the economics, the way that the government of the United States looks at economics?
Right.
Okay.
Yeah. We call it mainstream economics. Uh-huh. These guys are definitely black sheep, so to speak. And then they talk about how to set up economic measures that reflect what's really happening as opposed to what this fantasy world economics creates, and then fits everything into. So it's quite a task to read this book. But anybody who's interested in the values behind economics, I would certainly recommend this. When we've done this workshop before, people have asked us for more practical kinds of things they can do immediately. So there's a bunch of things in the library. This one's called "The Next Step: 50 More Things You Can Do to Save the Earth" by the Earthworks Group. The original book, you know, 50 Simple Things You Can Do to Save the Earth, ran into a lot of criticism from people who said, on the one hand, mostly they said, you know, these are simple things people can do, but they won't You know, if everybody did them, we would save the Earth, but it's not all that likely that everybody will do them. Only a certain percentage of people will. You need to find ways that are more effective in reaching larger numbers of people. So they came out with another book that is kind of more public-directed, a little less private, personal-directed than the first one. But kind of along the same lines, you can make a difference, help protect the Earth, and how to live better on less, a guide for waste watchers. And there are a lot of these things. I mentioned the Voluntary Simplicity Association earlier among our, and we brought a whole bunch of these to share. Now this is the old edition. This came out last September and it's already out of date. Some of these books are no longer available at the Seattle Public Library, but they initially printed about 5,000 of these and they're out. We have, these are photocopies of the original. We ran out of them.
Withdrawn?
There just weren't enough copies of them. And when we tried to go buy more, they were out of print. So we've redone the list. We just finished redoing it, and it's going to be published sometime in the next month. There'll be a new edition of this. But the Voluntary Simplicity Association, which is the last address on here, will have the new edition. So get in touch with them in the next, after about September 15th or so. And there should be new editions of these. But we pass them out right now. We each have one.
We just need one.
Okay.
Has it changed much?
Yes.
They're going to add some new ones and try to get some Canadian books in there as well.
Okay. That's all I was going to conclude for today. We invite you back tomorrow at 10:30?
10:15.
10:15, something like that. Whatever the time slot is.
I think it's 10. Probably it's 10 to 10:30.
So 10:45.
Yeah, it's up there.
Yeah.
Something like
in the fireside room. Where
we'll be. Right.
Thank you.
Thank you.
You want me to put that in?
Oh, good. I forgot. We need to put diversity on this list.
Good. I'm sorry. Wondering if the Seattle Library
had done
something with the
work based on
that criteria.
I thought she was
going to
follow me in here, but I didn't.
They should get rid of all the books. It looked like they had used them a lot.
No, I don't remember reading that.
We often ignore our consultants.
Be better.